any organization would only attain its maximum potential to unlocking the potential of each and every individual. And then if they work together, then the potential is multiplied by X. So my job as the leader is to create that environment where everybody could unlock his full potential, you know, could be responsible. And then I need to make sure that I have the type of individual who are okay to work like that and to share and to let the other shine.
Welcome to the Friends of McGill Hockey Leadership Line Change Podcast. On this podcast, we interview McGill Hockey alumni with a specific list of questions relating to the themes of leadership, mentorship, habits, and resiliency in an attempt to tease out life lessons that have brought them success in their domain. On today's show, we have Francois Olivier. Francois has been the president and CEO of TC Transcontinental since 2008. Francois skated for McGill from 1985 to 1988 before graduating with a science degree in agriculture. Prior to that, he played junior for St. Jean and Verdun and was a draft pick for the Boston Bruins. His former coach, Ken Tyler, described him as a very responsible up-and-down winger with good speed and puck skills. He was a terrific teammate and a very popular and respected in the dressing room. Prior to joining TC Transcontinental, Francois worked as general manager of Canada Packers. He's a graduate of the Program for Management Development at Harvard Business School, and he serves on the boards of directors for CAE, Conference Board of Canada, Flexible Packaging Association, and the Montreal Heart Institute Foundation. Furthermore, Francois and his brother Martin recently contributed to create the Francois and Martin Olivier Athletics Award that provides scholarships for Francophone members of the McGill Men's Hockey Program. Without further ado, let's get started. Can you briefly tell us a little bit what you've been up to lately and share a brief story about the most fun you've had at McGill?
Well, lately I have been trying to manage an international business out of my cottage. Like everybody else, I learned to deal with COVID. As a company and as a group, and personally, I guess I have adapted, and both myself and the company and my family are all doing well. So that's good. But for all of us, a change and a high opening in many fronts of our respective lives. So, but all is good. Well, when I think about memories from McGill, I think I would start with before actually starting to go to school at McGill and actually, entering the program. Ken Tyler, our coach at the time, had the great idea of organizing a tour in Czechoslovakia. I joined the McGill program to that trip. I think it was the end of August of 85 in September, where I think for about 10 days we toured Czechoslovakia, and I got very good memories from that trip, both from on the hockey front, a friendship front, cultural front. It was a good way to start at McGill, and it was a good beginning, and it was a great 3 year of my life, the time that I spent at McGill, but it was a good way to start. But the hockey, not the school, because we came in 2 weeks late. I discovered at the time that my English was not up to par to go to school in English, but I did manage to get that resolve at one point.
Now, a lot of people that have been on the show so far have talked about those European trips. Now, is there one specific story from that trip that stands out, a good memory?
Ken was a really good coach, a really good leader. I remember one time we stopped in the middle of the road trip. I don't know what kind of room it was, but we started to play a game that involved a lot of gesture and a lot of drinking. It was those moments that he created that brought us back, that brought us as a group close to one another rather quickly. And I was a rookie at the time, but there was so many things that happened on that trip that when we came back from that trip, we were really one team. So there was so many things we did, some that I cannot share with you on this podcast, but it was fun to be welcome in the McGill family this way. And I have very good memories of not only what we did, but how I felt and what I share with the guys who were there in that trip.
Now I'd like to hear about some of your favorite inspirations. You've risen to a prominent role in business and in leadership role. And I was wondering if there's a book or podcast that you'd recommend to the current McGill team?
I'm not too much of a podcast guy. I'm an old fashioned type of guy. You know, the COVID thing for me was a high opening as how much I was not working with computer. I'm still working with my pen and my paper and my little calculator. So I cannot give you advice on any podcast as I'm not a big user. I get inspired. I've read book that through times had helped me, but what I get my energy from meeting other people, listening to other people's story, I feel that this direct contact, you could not only get the theory, but feel the emotion and feel what matters. And what matters is often the emotion and the drive and the will. And I feel that you could touch that more by meeting people or interacting with people. And it's very, you know, oftentimes there's people who inspire you. They don't even know they inspire you. You know, it's at the moment that they come in your life, they say things or do things that make you reflect on your own, you know, place where you are. And that's giving you some things to reflect upon. So I would say that I'm more inspired by human connection and people that I encounter in my life. And that's been more of the way I get inspired. Book that I read early on that I feel were great, that I followed in my career is Good to Great. I think this book is really relevant about how to be a leader and what a true leader is. That's certainly a book that I would recommend to anybody to read, and maybe to read it twice, because you know what makes success is really simple at the end of the day. People are looking for things that are often too complicated, in my opinion. If you want a book, that's the book I would recommend. I really like the book also that Mike Babcock wrote after the Olympics. I read that book a couple of times. It's full of annotation. I think he speaks a lot about what true leadership is all about and teamwork and doing what needs to be done for the team. So that also a book that I sometimes go back to. So that would be my two book I would recommend.
And that Good to Great book, when Martin Raymond was our coach in my final year, he had photocopied that chapter on level 5 leadership, gave it to our leadership group. And he wanted the message to get passed on to the leaders was that, you know, the team is good right now. He said, but your legacy as the leader is also what you leave the team with and how to develop the leaders behind you. And I thought that was a really, really important message. And that lasted, and I still remember that one to this day. So along those same lines of the inspiration, is there a quote or saying that you've found helpful in your life?
What drive my life is, I don't have a specific quote, but it's really to believe in yourself, you know, to really trust, stay positive, to believe in yourself, no matter what people say, no matter what position you feel you're in. If you don't stop believing that it could be done and that you never give up, you know, a lot of good things happen. It's amazing how, you know, having your mind in the right place and putting your head down and working hard can get you a lot of success, you know. So people sometimes make it too complicated and try to think too much. I mean, you got to feel what you feel is right for you and stay positive no matter what and work hard at it. And for me, it has always been something that came out of it that turned out to be positive. So I would say believing in yourself and never giving up are two principles that I'm trying to apply in my everyday life.
And that's a good message. And that might answer the next question here, because the next part I want to get into some life lessons and advice. So if you thought back to your first year at McGill, what advice would you have given yourself coming in?
You know, in hindsight, I was not prepared at all to come to McGill. The main thing being the language for me. You know, I'd played junior hockey at my last year with the Canadian junior. My coach was English speaking, and I thought that I spoke English because I knew back check and forecheck, and you know. But when I came to McGill, you know, I realized that both playing hockey with the kind of commitment that we needed to do in terms of practicing and every day in the games and studying. It was very difficult for me for the language. And at one point I got discouraged because I was not too bad. Actually, I was good at school, but my first semester coming in at McGill, I was really struggling at school. And then I had a moment, I still remember, it was an exam where you have 100 questions and each question you have a multiple choice, you know, you got A to E to read, and you had 3 hours to do the exam. And I couldn't read the thing in 3 hours, never mind answering it. So I basically at that time went in that exam saying, you know, I'm going to leave the program. I cannot succeed academically here. I did the exam when he said 5 minutes, you know, and you're done. I was at question 60. I did 40 purely, you know, crossing it. And I said, that's it. I'm going to fail and I'm going to move on. And I had made plan to move to a French university and abandon the hockey program. And then when I received my mark, I still remember it was 72%. I couldn't believe it. So I got lucky. And the people who really convinced me to stay was not only the French guy who went through the same thing, but a lot of the English speaking guy, they came to see me and they say, you know, you're in the team. We know it's hard, but don't quit. We know you can do this. And they really convinced me to keep going. And to this day, I thank those guys because, you know, my life would have probably been very different if we would have quit McGill and the hockey program. So right from the get-go, the team was really important for me, and I never forgot that. And that's why when I did the little donation to McGill, I said I wanted, if possible, the help to go to somebody who come and speak French and have issue, you know, learning in English early on. And so that's kind of my little story that I remember from when I came in.
That's a really inspiring story because even, you know, as an assistant coach, when recruiting players, it's one of the major things to overcome. From Francophone players from different parts of Quebec, it's one of the challenges. And I find that the players that I played with, I think about Benoit Martin, Mathieu Leclerc, Benoit Lassard, some of the Francophone players coming in, they ended up being some of the most successful players on the ice and off the ice in school as well.
Yeah, but the support from the team was really, really key at that time because without that, I would have not made the same decision. So it was, you know, that was really important for me.
What advice would you give a graduating student from the McGill hockey team when they're about to enter the workforce? And what advice should they ignore?
Well, the advice is to trust themselves. I mean, what they went through, both from academically at McGill, it's still one of the best university in North America, in my opinion. And the, you know, the rigor that the hockey program and the discipline that you need to have to succeed in both, you know, playing hockey at that level and making the commitment and being successful, you know, academically, it's a testimony of, you know, how good these guys are or are prepared they are coming out of the program. You don't actually know that, but when you go and out there and work, you're in a sense in competition with other people and you're very, very well prepared to enter the whatever you want to do in life. So I think they should believe in themselves, acknowledge that they're well prepared. For me, I at one point I always had mentors to help me in what I choose. I choose business. And a little bit like my story that I've told you, that the hockey team was kind of my support group for me to help me deal with things that were challenged for me. Obviously, when you get out of the program, I think what you should try to avoid is that isolation, you know. So to try to find people that you trust. I had mentors in my career, and some of them, they were not, you know, some of them were very good in what I was trying to do in business, but some, they were not that good in business, but they were that sounding board that helped you keep going. So I would say try to invest in having, you know, people around you to help you do what you want to do out of the out of your school. And the thing that I would say don't do is, like, it's good to have a plan. It's good to be committed and follow that plan. But early on, I think you should keep your eyes open and maybe, you know, experience a few things to find your true passion. If you think you got it, that's good. But I think everybody should not lock themselves in too fast in one track and say, this is what I've always wanted to do. And early on, you should give yourself the opportunity maybe to experience a few things and have a little bit of people around you that can make you think about your choices in life. And it's nothing like experiencing a few things before choosing your true passion. And there's many paths that leads to where you need to go. And I would say, trusting, in French we say la bonne étoile, you know, trusting that, you know, where life is taking you is the right path, and staying positive would be a few advice that I would give to younger people.
So those notes on mentorship were really important, and it sounded like within the team when you played at McGill there were some really good mentors around the team and around the program. As you've continued in business, have you developed other mentors, and what type of mentors are you looking for? And just to talk a little bit about the mentorship as you progress throughout your career, and then now as the leader of your company, as the CEO and president, what type of mentors do you have now? How has that evolved over time?
I would say in the hockey program, to me, I got a lot of advice and mentorship in a sense from the team. Also, Ken was really good, because early on when I came from the junior program and being drafted, and I decided not to keep going in the AHL, which I could have tried, I felt a little bit like going to McGill was a second citizen price, you know, not trying to go to Boston and all that. And early on, I treated the program this way. And then at one point, Ken told me, hey, if you don't want to do this, or if that's not important for you, or if you think, you know, like, we're not serious about what we're doing here, you should quit, you know, you should go. And then he made me realize that I was not 100% involved or committed. And then once I did that click in my head, it changed my experience in the program, and I started to be more involved and to participate more and to enjoy it more. So that's what mentors do for you. You know, they make you mm-hmm. think, or they ask you questions that make you reflect. In my business career, I had two mentors. One unofficial mentor, my father-in-law is the entrepreneur who created the company that I manage today. So he was certainly a mentor for me, especially where I lost my father when I was 18. And then I've met this man in my 20s. So he was certainly an important mentor, both business and then personally. And then at one point in business, I was doing a little bit of soul searching. I was very successful, but too aggressive, very confrontative with people. And then I took an outside mentor, somebody that I admire, who was a CEO of a very large corporation. I called him out of the blue and introduced myself and asked him if he wanted to be my mentor. And he'd been my mentor for a very, very long time. He's now close to his 80s. And as close as last summer, I had a call to make on the business, and I was not sure. And then I had a dinner with him, and then he helped me, you know, like make me think straight. So the mentors are very important, because they're only there to help you, and they don't have an agenda. And if they're good, they just listen to you. And so it's been very important for me, that mentorship in my business career. And it goes beyond that, you know, they make you a better human being. And that's what it's all about. And today I do mentorship for some younger people. And actually, it's very weird, because you get the same kind of benefit being on any ends, because when you're the person who give the mentorship, when you listen to yourself or you look at those younger people, they make you think, and then you receive as much as you give. So it's kind of a weird thing when you grow old that the mentorship is still there, but in a different way.
It's really interesting to hear you speak about the mentors in business. I'm more familiar with mentors in the sporting domain and coaching. Mm-hmm. And as coaches get further up and they become the head coach at the major professional leagues, they talk about this concept of constellation mentors, where, you know, they're looking at who's the best in another sport, who's the best in, you know, soccer, who's the best in football, and then learning from those people. So it's interesting to hear that you reached out to someone else at the top of another company. Yeah. So going from mentorship to leadership, and just thinking about being in that leadership role since 2008 and being in leadership roles really since you've been with the company, thinking about, you know, in the McGill hockey program, there's always been good leadership development from the coaching staff down to leaders and trying to have that mentorship from within the team. From your experience in business, what are some leadership behaviors that you look for when you choose leaders in the company? What are some leadership behaviors that people should avoid?
For me, we're a family business, and family business or any business, they think the color of their leaders. You know, the value of the business is really important to me. Being a family business, the first thing I look at is there a match of values between the individual and who we are in this company. I mean, it's very dangerous to look at the skill of somebody or what he can do for you in terms of achieving goals or business objective. But if the way he go at it is not in connection with the culture that you've tried to build over the years, that this you need to avoid that. So for me, a lot of what we're all about is we're a company where respect for other people is very important. Teamwork is very important. And these are the types of behavior I'm going to try to look at if the person have those behavior. And our company have a good dose of humility. These are the types of human quality that I would start to look at first. And then if it's not there, I'm trying not to be blurred by the talent or the ability of the person to meet the business objective that we're looking to, or the business talent we're looking to acquire. So this is really critical, because at the end of the day, any organization would only attain its maximum potential to unlocking the potential of each and every individual. And then if they work together, then the potential is multiplied by X. So my job as the leader is to create that environment where everybody could unlock his full potential, you know, could be responsible. And then I need to make sure that I have the type of individual who are okay to work like that and to share and to let the other shine and are not too, you know. So that would be the type of thing that I'm looking for. So I'm trying to spot those people who are coming in for their own career, as opposed to, you know, make our family or our company stronger, and that they feel that they would be happy working this way in our company. Some people call that a servant leader.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and talk about resiliency. So you mentioned you're at your cottage. Are you doing some cross-country skiing while you're there?
Oh, I'm doing a lot of things to keep me busy. I'm doing some running. I'm doing some cross-country, some downhill skiing. I'm even playing once or twice a week outside hockey. You know, I got friends who are doing rinks outside, and I'm playing outside hockey. I like that. So, I'm doing a lot of things to keep in shape, and also to keep me, I think with this COVID thing, it's even more important to try to look for that balance. And for me, being active physically, it's kind of what keeps me balanced. Without that, I think I would have a hard time dealing with the present situation. So, And, you know, one of the good, bad thing of COVID is in my regular job, I'm traveling 50% of the time. So there's 50% of the days that I'm not home. Now I'm always home. So that I'm missing interacting with other people, with our employees, with our partners, our customers. But on the other end, that's giving you a lot of time, you know, for yourself. And I'm trying to use this time to take care of myself and to find that equilibrium. For most of us, I think that we should try to come out of this pandemic with some new behavior and some new balance in our life that would, you know, potentially make this thing a positive thing in our life for the long term. That's what I'm trying to, you know, say to myself. What is it that I'm going to keep in terms of a new habit that I invested more time in myself, in a sense that I should keep when the traveling is starting again and the dinner and, you know, when you're a CEO of a public company, you got a lot of function and things to attend, which have all stopped. So I think when it's going to restart, I'm going to have a little bit less of those in my calendar.
I read that you did a cross-country skiing expedition to the magnetic North Pole to help raise money to support veterans and their families. I wanted to kind of link that into resilience. I was wondering if there's, since you've started, you mentioned a good story earlier about overcoming some adversity early in your first year at McGill. And just wonder if you have any other experience where you overcome a setback or failure, and then what habits or routines would help you overcome these setbacks.
This trip was quite an experience. I would say that, again, I found a lot of the resilience about how scary this thing was. It was, you know, reaching the magnetic North Pole unsupported. So you got your stuff and your, you know, the fuel and the food that you're going to eat in a sled. But again, we were a large group. The idea was 12 soldier with 12 business people. And the idea of the trip was for us to interact. You know, these guys had some issue coming back from wars, but they were leaders in their world, which was the, you know, military world, and we were leaders in the business world, and it was to share. And again, I took a lot of my strength in the group. You know, I felt that potentially dangerous, but nothing could happen because we're all together. And I learned a whole lot about their reality and their world, which I didn't know. So it was quite a trip because I was preparing for the resilience and the physical resilience, you know, sleeping outside. What am I going to eat? Am I going to sleep? Am I going to freeze? So I'd prepare myself and train myself for the physical part of the trip. And you could call that preparing for it to be resilient. But what I had not planned for was the emotional part of that trip, learning about what these men and women went through in times of war. It was something, like I said, that I was unaware of. So it was really a big emotional journey, that trip. In terms of resilience, for me, is the same team. You know, you gotta believe in yourself no matter what people say, and you gotta believe that if you are doing what you feel deep down is the right thing, that you're going to come out of whatever slump you're in, and don't give up. And then don't isolate yourself. You know, when you feel that it's a tough moment or a tough situation, being resilient is a lot easier when people are helping you or listening to you or giving you advice. So once we often time when we have big issue, we're not too proud of that. Sometimes we don't want other people to see, or we don't want to talk about it. And then if you isolate yourself, it's tough to be resilient when you're on your own. When you reach out to other people or people you trust, it's easier to be resilient together as opposed to being resilient by yourself.
Next, I want to talk about pressure and dealing with high pressure situations. Being a publicly traded company, you have those quarterly results, you have stock prices, you have some pressure that you need to deal with as a leader. So when you're in those high pressure situations and you need to make difficult decisions, are there some specific tools or tactics or processes that you use in your approach, such as what questions do you ask yourself and how do you come to a decision?
Yeah, being public and myself, I became CEO at a very young age, so I felt a lot of pressure early on, and it was and on site, I was not too sure I was prepared to do that at 42 years old. But anyway, they thought I could. Believing in yourself is a common theme for me. Preparing yourself. There's nothing like preparing, practicing, reading, you know, doing the things that the others think it's silly to do or it's too much. So working hard, being prepared, help you deal with pressure. So taking care of yourself, I was thinking about that equilibrium. Early on in my career, I was devoting way too much time just business, 16 hours a day. I was not taking care of myself, not eating well, and I was gain weight. And then you hit that cliff where you actually start to go down. You know, the more you put in, you know, it's not helping you. So having that balance of staying healthy in your head, healthy, you know, physically, it is a good thing. And for me, I have this principle that once I did that, you know, I did everything I could. I try to stay balanced. I have that capacity to go to bed after 15, 16 hours when it's a high pressure situation and say, today, I did everything I could. And I don't give a shit what people say or what happened. I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to start over tomorrow morning at 6. Some people, they worry what's going to happen. What's this? What's that? What other people say? What's the bankers going to say? Are they going to lend us the money? Blah, we're going to lose the customer. At one point, when you give everything you got, you know, it's time to go to bed, to rest, and to, you know, disconnect yourself from the situation, to breathe, to take some energy back and start again. So I think I have developed that capacity of, you know, separating me, you know, for 7-8 hours a day from the situation to go back at it, because I see so many people, they got caught into a situation and they go down with it. I don't have the right word in English, but it's not a good translation and maybe not the right word, but it's kind of, I call that the fuck you principle. You know, I've did everything I can, leave me alone. Now I'm resting and we're going to start over tomorrow, you know, and then that's it. So this is how I learned to deal with pressure and stay on top of it in a sense.
How do you define mastery?
Well, I think mastery, a lot of people, and again, when you're young, mastery is a lot in the eye of other people, you know, what other people think, what other people say. And are you on the cover of the magazine? Do you receive a prize, an award? Are you recognized by your peer? So when you're young, that's what you're shooting for. As you get older, you realize that mastery is internal to you. You know, you feel it when you're at the right place, you've done the right thing, and you feel that's, you know, what you've done or what you have accomplished. And it's often as a group that you're very proud of it, you know, and sometimes it could be things that people don't really see or put you on the front page of the paper or give you a big trophy or a big, you know, pay raise or what have you. For me, mastery as I grow older is more you feel it inside, you know, that you are close to it. What I like about this is I've never felt that I got it. So sometimes you feel that you're close, but you could always do better. But I've learned through the years to, when I get closer to it, to at least take a little bit of a moment to enjoy it, because if you're always chasing something that, you know, you can never really fully touch, and then life is miserable. So when you feel you're close enough, you feel it inside, I would say try to take a couple of days at least to enjoy it and celebrate it before you go back at chasing it again.
That's a great way to put it. I really like that. The last question gets to go to your old coach, Ken Tyler. So I spoke with him this morning. Yeah. he wanted you to talk about the time when you played. At the time you played, there was only a handful of French Canadians on the team. And then he wanted you to discuss the value of integrating into that environment and what were the challenges that came along with it.
It's a weird feeling when you, I'm a very, as you could see, a vocal person. I like to talk, I like to communicate, but when you have that barrier, it kind of restrain you a little bit about connecting with the people who don't speak French, you know, who only speak English. So obviously early on, I connected more with the guys who spoke French, but I quickly realized that some of the guys that I had more things in common or interests, or they read me better. Some of them, they were English speaking, and you know, I got going and I learned. Really, for me, I mentioned it before, without the team, without those connections, I would have probably not finished my school at McGill. I would have went to an English school, so a French school. So I always remember that. And I talked about it when Ken asked me about, do you really want to be in that program, or you are too important and too good for us? I started to see the program and the other players in a different way, and I really started to enjoy my time at McGill, and it was a great time. And when I look at what everybody's doing, you know, we all been very successful in our various career that we choose, and I'm still very proud to having been part of that group from 85 to 88. We certainly were not the best on the ice, but I think in terms of creating great young leaders of tomorrow, I think our class did pretty good.
And with that, I think that's a good note to end on. And thanks for sharing some really insightful answers to those questions. Aside from that, I want to thank you for your contributions to the program. It goes a long way to help recruiting, to help continue to recruit the top student athletes from Quebec. So thank you for that. And with that, we wrap up today's podcast. We want to thank you for listening and stay tuned for more episodes of the FMH podcast channel. Until then, keep your elbows up and your sticks on the ice.